Hello, hello to all the dorks out there. Welcome to the live stream. Today I'm interviewing a very good friend of mine, Jordan Laster. Many of you guys will know him, hopefully. I met Jordan when he was a freshman. I was a sophomore at university, and we weren't very close when I first met him, but I always admired him from afar. I saw just how magnetic of a personality he was. You know, everyone always had good things to say about him. We had friends in common. As my time at university went on, I got to know Jordan better. We were like quasi-roommates, I joke, for a little while. But I really admired not only his tenacity, his discipline, his high ethics, his character, but also his mind and his brilliance and his humility as well. He's a very smart guy, and was fortunate enough to become good enough friends with him that I've been able to grow with him through his professional career and have conversations with him from time to time, and really just tried to keep up and learn and have conversations. And crypto is the little man's revolution, right? We all know this. It's a retail driven phenomenon, and I have learned so much and have been able to talk about these things with Jordan off camera. And we've also talked a lot about, you know, just trying to be a high performer and performing at just your peak potential. And he's someone that we all can learn from. So without further ado, Jordan Laster, welcome to Stake Podcast.
Yo, yo.
How's everything going?
How you doing, Eduardo?
Good, good. It's funny.
Going well, man. We got
It's funny talking to you in this kind of context, just because we're always, you know, joking around on the phone and everything. I want to just jump in to tell everyone a little bit about your background. Obviously, I know, but let us know where you're from. You know, maybe kind of bring us up to speed from your early days of wrestling to attending Princeton and being a Princeton wrestler to graduating and where you are today.
Yeah, 100%. Thanks for the introduction. Appreciate it. I grew up in the small town of Bolingbrook, Illinois. Just this small, like 80-pound kid with a dream. I started wrestling in about sixth grade, and I just worked hard at it. I went to Izzy Style Wrestling, which is a huge club in the country, and did that pretty much till junior year when I started getting recruited by Princeton, and things went well there. I ended up at Princeton, wrestled there for 4 years, was a captain my senior year, won the conference title, got a degree in psychology, graduated, and yeah, now I'm in the working world. I was in New York City for 3 years, but once COVID hit last March, I was like, peace. I didn't want to pay all that rent and stuff. So yeah, I've just been kind of traveling, and I landed in Basalt, Colorado these last few months.
So are you up in the mountains somewhere? Are you, what's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like right in this valley. There's these two mountains that are just like waiting to crush us, I guess. It's kind of scary out there, but yeah, a lot of skiing, cool stuff out here.
Beautiful scenery. Yeah. That's awesome. I want to go back to those days, you know, before you arrived at Princeton. What was it about wrestling that you enjoyed? How did you get into that?
Yeah, so actually it's a funny story. So wrestling was like the last sport I tried. So I played baseball, I played basketball. I was absolute trash. I think basketball, I made 1 point the entire season, and it was to go to overtime in the last championship game. It was a free throw.
So you were the one they were trying to foul, hoping you wouldn't make the free throw.
Exactly. And then we won in overtime, so let's go. But yeah, I was trash at any game that involved a ball. I think I was in gymnastics for like 3 months when I was like a kid, and then I was in karate. So karate was where I started getting really good, kind of found my groove, and I realized that physical contact sports was my thing. And then fast forward, I went into middle school, and some of my best friends from Bolingbrook were like, hey man, we want to try this wrestling thing. you should try it out. And I love the WWE. Like, I had a ton of figures. I had like some of the this John Cena bling, like the little spinny chain. I had his rap album. I still know like every single word.
That's funny.
But yeah, man, I gave it a shot, and it was just like, wow, with these takedowns and things like that. Like, I started beating up on guys bigger than me. I was learning how to defend myself, and I was always the smallest kid. I think I was like 60 pounds in sixth grade. But with wrestling and karate and things like that, I learned that I could kind of defend myself and, be ready to survive if I had to against, bigger people
For
and
sure.
threatening people. So
For
it was
sure.
cool.
Yeah, I want to talk to you just about like the mindset of a wrestler, because I'm from Oklahoma, which is a pretty big wrestling state right there up with Illinois, I'd say. And I've always just had such tremendous respect for wrestlers because of how intimate, not physically, but like intimate in terms of your opponent, the match is, right? I feel like you're doing all this training, and maybe you could just talk to us a little bit about like the mental toughness that is, necessary to succeed at the sport, especially at the level, that you've had success.
Yeah, 100%. So with wrestling, you're out there against your opponent. I think in high school it's 6 minutes, college it's 7 minutes, and it doesn't seem like a long time, but what you guys are out there doing is you are having a legal fight in which you can't punch or kick or anything, but you're grabbing each other's legs, and it's your will against that person's will, your technique against that person's technique. And it's not just like, strength and muscling it out there. So in order to do that, it's an incredibly exhausting sport, and you need to put in hours upon hours of work. And it can't just be like the physical work. Some of it has to be the meditation. Some of it has to be, dealing with anxiety, because we all get nervous for things. You could get nervous if you have a hard workout at the gym, but it's a whole nother level when someone's coming to club you in the head and, make your face hit the mat. And throw you off your feet.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's difficult. The more you do it, the more repetition you get, the easier it is. But I think with wrestling, it's just such an exhausting sport. And I definitely make the claim that it is the hardest sport in the world. I'm a bit biased,
Yeah,
but
fair, fair. I want to talk about, I'm sure there might be someone who listens to this. Maybe it's a young guy and he wrestles and he wants to be able to compete at the same level that you've been able to, attend an Ivy League school maybe, or Division One wrestling conference. Talk to us about, what it takes to be able to not only land there, but then once you're there, talk to us about, the discipline and the balance of being a student athlete at one of the, you're talking about the sport that's probably one of the most physically rigorous and then at the most mentally rigorous university. So just talk to us about that duality and how they work off each other.
yeah, so man, Princeton wrestling was incredibly difficult. Not just because of the wrestling part, it's Division One. You're going up against the best guys in the country, four-time state champs, national champs. I mean, it doesn't get any tougher than that. So, but on top of that, you have the academics, and Princeton's no joke with the academics. So I think the big thing, and I really learned this quickly my freshman year, is you have to learn how to manage your time. So if you have a few minutes before you go out to morning lift, read some of that history reading that you had in the class. You finish morning lift, maybe catch a quick meal, get a nap, go to class, and then between classes, getting your work done. It's always taking advantage of your time and not just going and playing video games like we did in high school, between each class and things like that. So I think the biggest takeaway is time management. And then also in the wrestling room, it's always picking the coach's brains. Once practice is over, it's not really over. Like, make sure you get your extra repetition or reps in. Make sure you're asking them to go over things maybe you screwed up in practice or at a match. It's watching film. I mean, I would stay after practice for at least 20, 30 minutes every day, maybe every other day. Just picking their brains and sometimes just getting extra conditioning in. And obviously, like, with wrestling, there's weight cutting too. So sometimes we have to stay after and do a little bit of that. But it's really just time management. You just can't waste any of that time that you have. And we all need a little downtime, but it's being smart with that.
For sure. Yeah, I remember just how busy you always were. Like when, if I was able to get a second of your time just to get you to stand still for a little bit, I was always super excited because I mean you move, you go, you're very high energy, you're a very high performer, intense but in a good way. What's one of your like favorite memories from Princeton Wrestling?
Wow, favorite memories. So I would definitely say winning the conference championship.
That was
That
your
was
junior
one of
year?
that was my senior year.
Okay.
That's when we were pseudo roommates.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was one of the big goals I had for myself. You get this nice huge bowl as a reward. It was super cool. It was challenging. I wasn't even like the one seed. I think I was a two or three seed. I had a super exciting match in the semifinals where I just attacked, 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 and my opponent was doing all he could to kind of stall and hold on to the lead, and I ended up coming out on top. I think I celebrated a little bit. I don't really celebrate, but I was like, yeah, let's go. Like,
As you should,
coaches
as you
are
should.
Yeah, coaches are hugging me. It was just an awesome feeling. But I would say also Princeton wrestling really took off. I think it was after my sophomore year. Well, sophomore year we had a few qualifiers for the national tournament. I made it to the round of 12 and lost a brutal match in the blood round, which is like the round to become American. And we really started to take off. So we weren't like getting thrashed anymore. I think we were like 2-12. Either before I got there or my freshman year. And then I think we completely turned that around to a winning record. So just having some of those big team wins. I know we were at Boston University my freshman year. I think we were down like 20 points, so we needed everything to go right, and it did. That was one of the most exciting team wins I've ever had in my time wrestling. So it's just like little moments like that with the team too.
For sure. And I know that you built such great relationships with your teammates after you graduated, started working at a startup with some fellow wrestlers. Talk to us a little bit about, when you were entered into the workforce, what were some of the, experiences, maybe lessons learned, maybe some of the surprises. And then how did you continue to keep up the physical aspects of your life after, sort of retiring from wrestling.
Yeah, 100%. So, our CEO, actually, let me back up a little bit. So, my junior year after nationals, I just got knocked out of the tournament, and our head of sales at my startup, Nextcaller, he came up to me. He was a Princeton wrestler, and he's like, "Hey, Jordan, work at this startup. Would love to have you on the sales team. Send me an email in the fall if you're interested." So, I'm out here. It's the fall of senior year. I'm like, man, I don't know what I want to do when I graduate. I have this psych degree, but maybe I should look into like forensic psychology, go into the FBI or something like that. So I was looking into the FBI, talked to a few agents, which is cool, and they kind of steered me away from it. So I didn't do that. So I took his name's Jeff. I took Jeff up on his offer. And yeah, I ended up at Nextcaller. So I was in sales for about a year and a half. But on the side, I was learning how to code just because I always wanted to learn. And I tried a class at Princeton freshman year, and I think I dropped it at the midterm because, I just got wrecked.
It's like me and
But
my physics. I did the exact same thing.
yeah, I tried astrophysics too, same thing. But yeah, I was learning that on the side. And during all that, you were mentioning fitness. I was going up to the New York Athletic Club. So it's this club in New York. I haven't been there about a year. I think it's on like 59th Street and 7th, something like that. And yeah, I'd go up there and wrestle with some of the kids. They had kids from like Beat the Streets, which is an awesome organization, getting kids off the streets and getting them in the wrestling room, teaching them those lessons and discipline. I found some coaches there, and then I actually started getting ready to compete again. So I competed at like a charity event for Beat the Streets, and I ended up breaking my hand in the first 10 seconds, which was silly. Yeah, so it wasn't hard to stay in shape or anything. I was just still wrestling, going to UFC gym, trying to get some MMA stuff in, things like that.
As I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe this is fast forward, but I remember you doing these crazy challenges of like I'm about to sprint like for the next 3 hours at like the speed at 20. You were doing crazy challenges that like I mean most people I go to the gym, you kind of just most people don't have a plan. They're kind of just oh I'm punching this, I'm doing this, and now an hour's gone by and I'm done. But like I remember talking with you where like you'd get off the phone like yeah man I just got done like running doing something outrageous. So talk to us about those challenges, those different goals you were setting and a little bit of your mental process, why you were doing it and all that.
Yeah, 100%. So my roommate Jake and I, Jake wrestled at Princeton as well. One of my best friends, awesome dude. We kind of, when you're not wrestling anymore, you lose a bit of yourself. You kind of lose that piece of your identity, and it's like, what's going to fill the void? So for me to fill that void, I needed something, a challenge to look forward to. And I didn't want it to just be like work related or something, mental or like studying or, passing some exam. I needed it to be physical because I think the best way to learn who you are and find yourself is to put yourself in deep waters physically and see if you get out. So yeah, I take you through a few of them. So I think the first one we did was the Manhattan lap. We were incredibly irresponsible taking on this challenge. I think we stayed up till 4 a.m. the night before drinking beers. And we're like, yeah, guys, we're going to go run around all of Manhattan. So we got up at 11 a.m. and super dehydrated, like no nutrients in us. And we ran all of Manhattan. I think it ended up being like 35 miles, with the last like 6 miles being like a limp run. Our knees were just torched for about a week, so it was incredibly stupid, but we got it done, man. And I still don't know how, but I mean, things like that, you find yourself, man. I remember just kind of being like, wow, like I can't believe I did that. What's the next one? So the next one was I did the treadmill marathon challenge. And the reason I did this one was because there was one time I was cutting weight in high school, my sophomore year, from like 110 to 103, and it just would not come off. And I was running on the treadmill for about an hour. I had like a coach on me, and I started kind of mentally breaking. I was like, I wanted to cry a little bit. I probably couldn't have cried if I wanted to.
Wow.
I had no water in me, but yeah, I just remember thinking back to that when I was thinking of what my next challenge would be. And I was like, you know what? I need to conquer that demon. That one almost got me, and I got to get it back. So yeah, I was like, the best way to do that is to get on a treadmill, stare straight ahead for 26.2 miles, and see if I get it done. And I had a buddy, Greg, who joined me on the treadmill, the treadmill next to me, and we crushed it, man. I went in there prepared this time. I had like those little runner gel packs. I had a giant bottle of water, and I would just, take a swig of that and some of the gel pack every like 8 minutes. Stayed hydrated, and yeah, we knocked it out. And
How long did it take?
I think I did it in 3 hours and 52 minutes, something like
Dang,
that.
that's crazy.
But yeah, man, it was St. Paddy's Day too. So right when I finished, I was like laying down on the ground stretching, and Jake comes up to me and he's like, dude, like the bars on Stone Street are packed. We gotta go. And I
That's classic Princeton wrestlers, bro. That's classic Princeton wrestlers. Dudes were just like, anyways. You guys go hard in all aspects. No doubt, no doubt.
yeah, and I guess so. There's two more challenges I want to touch on. So I tried to get into eating challenges just because I was like, you know what? I'm mentally crushing it with these physical ones. I could do it with the food, Worst comes to worst, you might vomit or something. So we went to Brick Lane Curry House in New York City, me and Jake, and they claim to have the world's spiciest curry. I think it's called the Fall Curry. And you have 30 minutes to eat it, and it's a pound of it, and it's temperature hot, and it's also super hot, like spicy. So I went 5 bites in, and I ended up in the bathroom the rest of the time. And Jake actually ate it the second fastest like time ever. So he's a stud. He does like all the eating challenges. I leave that stuff to him. So I'm
Shout
done
outs
with
to
that.
Jake. Shout out to Jake.
Yeah, he's an animal. But yeah, the challenge I just did this past weekend was running 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. We did that one for Challenge Aspen, which is a nonprofit out here. And yeah, they're out here redefining limits for people with mental and physical disabilities, which is awesome. So like you'll see people, who don't have legs who are out there skiing or snowboarding and just making it happen and allowing them to do things that a lot of us take for granted. So we raised a little more than $5,000 for them. Just running a lot of miles outside. I think our intervals where we ran at 1 a.m., 5 a.m., 9 a.m., and then it would just kind of keep repeating. But yeah, those are kind of the challenges we've been doing. It always feels good to be done with them, but like 5 minutes later, you're already like, all right, that euphoric feeling's gone. What's next? So.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are gonna listen to this and they're just gonna think about, what does that take in terms of just the mental capacity to be able to set audacious goals like that and then go for it. And I know that I remember during this time you had been doing a lot of reading. David Goggins was a book that you suggested I read at one point. And this just this idea of mental toughness and like pushing yourself to the limits. Maybe you could talk to us a little bit about just like your philosophy on, life as it relates to that.
100%. So this is something I don't really talk about a ton. I guess with like my girlfriend and Jake, sometimes I do. And I've kind of come to this conclusion as I've read books like Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, things like that. But for me, survival is a huge theme in life, that I think a lot of people don't think about because, most of us have houses, we have shelter. We're not worried about like the chaos of the world. And a lot of times when I've gone through hard wrestling practices in adversity, I always kind of think to myself, this is getting me ready in case, the world goes to hell and, all hell breaks loose. And as I read like Can't Hurt Me and I see David Goggins, staying strong when he's doing all these crazy like military training camps, or not training camps, like hell weeks as he calls it. It just makes me think that, if he can get through that and I'm able to get through some of this stuff, I'll be ready. If things go to hell, like I've been saying. But yeah, just to kind of go down to the survival rabbit hole. I always constantly think, if someone's passing me on a bike, like what if they go to attack me right now? Okay, I'll be ready. If someone just comes up and attacks me from behind, like I'll be ready, I'll throw them, I'm in good shape. And that's kind of why I always stay in shape, why I'm always wrestling. I always want to be prepared. I want to be as prepared as possible for anything that could possibly happen. If I have to go and run 26 miles to get out of this valley I'm in, because of whatever's going on, I want to be able to do it. I don't want to be that guy who's out of breath the first 5 minutes and, unfortunate things happen just because I wasn't ready.
I want to interject because I'm so curious as to where did this come from? Because earlier on in the interview, you were talking about I was a small guy, 60, 80 pounds, and you mentioned the word survival earlier in the whenever you were talking about your pre-college days. So I'm just so interested, and maybe that's getting way deep, but where does this come from? Where does this philosophy and this mindset, what's at the root of it?
Yeah, so that's a huge question, and it's something I've been kind of trying to figure out. I just remember when I was younger, I would always watch like Dragon Ball Z, a lot of those like crazy fighting anime shows, and I was always like very intrigued by how they just fought super hard to survive and like beat the bad guy. And I know this stuff sounds corny, but it was super motivating when I was a little kid. And I wasn't in any like crazy situations as a kid where I went through some sort of like adversity where I had to pull out
Fight
all
for
the
your
stops to
life.
survive. Exactly.
Yeah.
I was fortunate, single mom household, but I just kind of got motivated by that. And I always wanted to be bigger, stronger, faster than everyone else. And I think a lot of it honestly comes from watching those kind of shows and being inspired by guys like Goku. And
Vegeta.
it's super corny, man, but it's the truth. And from there, I was always just kind of self-motivated. It didn't take a lot for me to get going, and I didn't really need anyone to push me to do things, so.
We're gonna segue very quickly here into, survival and crypto and how all of this relates to your understanding of Bitcoin. But before we do, we have a question here in the chat. Jake Guy asks, does that feeling of preparedness allow you to maintain an optimistic outlook?
Yeah, 100%. Jake Guy, what's up? yeah, so the more prepared I feel, the more confident I am. And I think confidence allows me to be more positive. So, just for example, if I'm going into an exam and I'm not confident, I'm going to be super negative, because I just don't think I'm going to get the job done. If I go into it and I'm confident, feel prepared, I'm going to be positive because I'm like, I'm going to go in here and crush this thing. So yeah, I think I just confident in a lot of physical aspects of my life, and it just allows me to keep that positive outlook on pretty much everything.
For sure. That was a good question. Okay, so you're out of college, you're doing all these crazy challenges. We have this understanding of, sort of this ingrained philosophy about survival. Tell me your crypto rabbit hole story. When was the first time Bitcoin came on your radar, and when was the first time where you realized, oh shit, this is very important?
Yeah, so I'll back it up to 2017. I just started working at Nextcaller. I think it was like 3 weeks out of college, and our head of sales and then another coworker of mine bought Bitcoin on Coinbase, and then they bought like Litecoin, and I was like, "What is this stuff? What are you guys talking about?" Actually, I had heard of Bitcoin in college because people were, I guess, getting fake IDs with it. But they're probably kicking themselves. Yeah, so I was like, you know what? What's Coinbase? I'll hop on. I'll just buy some just for the hell of it. I have a little bit of money now. I'm not using mom's credit card. And yeah, so I got a little bit, and I would say I just held it. I never really looked at it. I didn't go down the rabbit hole for about 3 years. Fast forward to March 2020. The Bitcoin price plummeted. I think it was down to like
Like
$6,000.
$4,000 or something like that. Yeah, 6,000. I think that's right.
Yeah. Jake and I were sitting at a bar called Stout in Financial District. And I think Jake had already kind of gone down the rabbit hole a little bit, but I still knew next to nothing. And yeah, he's like, man, the price is down. This is the time to buy. And I was like, you know why? Why do I want to throw more at this? And I didn't have any like negative perceptions of Bitcoin. I just didn't know much. So I was like, you know what? I trust you. You're one of my best friends. Like, you know what? I'll throw some at it. So I think I got like 0.2 Bitcoin, which still isn't a lot, but you know, for me at the time, it was a lot because I just didn't know anything about it. So yeah, threw some there, and then once you throw a lot at it, you're like, okay, I kind of want to make sure my money's not acting funny. So I'm going to start going down the rabbit hole myself. So yeah, after that, I left New York City. I went to Illinois, and my mom actually was super into crypto from her own like research and rabbit holes. So we kind of started bonding on that, and yeah, Jake started feeding me a bunch of resources. Like philosophically, there's like Robert Breedlove, there's Michael Saylor, guys like that. I started following everyone on Twitter involved with like Bitcoin. I also checked out some other projects like Ethereum and all that, but just to stay down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. Yeah, I started going down that rabbit hole, like you said, educating myself. And, now I'm sitting here. I have like a Bitcoin node. I got a cold card. I got all this crazy tech
Yeah,
that's coming out with it. So.
that's dope. And we're definitely going to talk about some other cryptocurrencies in a bit. Before we do, I want to talk about, as you were telling that story of you and Jake sitting at the bar, I couldn't help but think about, some of the incentive systems of Bitcoin. And it does take a lot of like learning and understanding, but once you, like you said, you put a little bit of money in it, you watch the money go up, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, what is this? Like, I gotta learn more. Everyone, not everyone, but people who are in cryptocurrency, they know that there's only 21 million Bitcoin. And the peer pressure part, the fact that your friends have it, and now you're learning that other people have it, the scarcity element of it. I want you to talk about, what made you finally be like, yes, this is it. Like, I remember offline you talked a little bit about Bitcoin helps you understand money. Could you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I was always the guy who just never understood finance or just econ, none of it, man. I went to Princeton and everyone, that was like the first thing they wanted to go and major in, and I was like, no thanks. And a lot of that was because I just wasn't confident, because I just didn't understand it. But I also just wanted to, think outside the box and do something different. So fast forward to Bitcoin and I start going down the rabbit hole. And like when I say I didn't know anything, like I didn't know anything about stocks, nothing. I had no investments. I just had this Bitcoin, other than like a Roth and, 401k stuff. But I just had this Bitcoin and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna just start learning. I hear there's this like finite supply, and now I see like more and more people are buying it. So I know what supply and demand is. I think it's gonna go up. And I think another big thing for me that really brought me to Bitcoin was after I read the white paper, I realized it completely eliminates the bank. There's no third party between me sending, Bitcoin to you or you sending it to me, which was huge because when it comes to survival, I think you have to be very independent. And Bitcoin gives you that. You can be your own bank, you can hold your own Bitcoin. No one has to do that for you. And once I saw that, I was like, wow, so you're telling me this is money that I can move at any time, I can move it easily, and I don't have to have anyone getting in the way of that. Because I've had issues with banks. I mean, we all have. And then if they hold your money, now there's, sometimes there's fraud, things like that. So I didn't have to worry about that. I got to take the full responsibility and ownership of my money. So that's really what drew me in.
Yeah, I love that. I love you talking kind of about just like the sovereignty and the control. So tell us about the conversations you started having with your mom, because your mom went further down the rabbit hole, it seems like, than you at first, right? And you've since kind of expanded out from Bitcoin. But talk to us about those conversations with your mom. I've met your mom before, and you guys have a very close relationship. She's a tremendous woman to be able to raise a son by herself and be able to send, to be as successful as you have, professionally, wrestling. Like, she's clearly a very smart woman herself in her own right. But just talk to us about those conversations and how you were thinking about it and how she was thinking about it.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember how she ended up down the rabbit hole. Honestly, I just think with COVID, it was just pure anarchy everywhere. And with that, we were all trying to figure out what do we do with our money? Is the market going to crash? Things like that. So she naturally started doing her own research and not listening to like Fox News and all these mainstream media channels that all have their own agendas, just kind of, going off and looking at what else there is. And she came into crypto through that. I didn't have to say anything. And a lot of the conversations we had were just like, how do you understand Bitcoin? What do you think it's going to do? Just asking some of those like fundamental questions, like what does Bitcoin solve? And then she actually knew a lot more about the altcoins than I did. So we'd start talking about like Ethereum, and she'd be like, oh, well, this guy I've been following down this rabbit hole says to buy this. Maybe we should check out VeChain, like all these crazy altcoins. So yeah, a lot of the conversations were just like understanding and seeing if we were on the same page. And oftentimes we weren't, because the resources we were using were vastly different. But at the end of the day, we really look out for each other, tell each other what projects to kind of look into. We don't just say go buy it. It's more go do your own research on this project. So yeah.
I want to talk to you about trying to. I want to ask you, how do you assess, what is your own investment framework in terms of when you're thinking about, okay, I'm going to put my hard-earned money into this altcoin, as opposed to Bitcoin? How do you just like weigh the risk? How do you weigh the opportunity cost? And how do you think about, well, what makes for a worthwhile investment, in any of these venture style altcoins?
Yeah, so if I'm being completely honest, I didn't start getting into altcoins till about last May. Jake, who was like super down the rabbit hole, started telling me there's this altcoin called Rune. My mom was telling me about VeChain, and all I would do is I would go and read the white papers. I would see, the use case for it. I'd check out the team. Look into each member, see if they were credible. And that was pretty much the framework I set for myself. I still didn't throw too much money at them, maybe like a few hundred dollars to each. And actually, around December of last year, that's when I was full stop Bitcoin. So I didn't move all of my stuff from the altcoins. I kind of just let it sit there. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to mess around with swapping them or anything. I don't want to deal with the tax implications. Let's just leave them there and see how they go. Which was also cool because it forced me to stay in the know with some of these projects, because I didn't just want to leave the money there and like not know what's going on at all. Or like you see the price of Rune skyrocket and you're like, what's going on? So then you're forced to go in and learn more. But yeah, at the current moment, I pretty much put all my money into Bitcoin, just because I think that is the dominant monetary network. I think that's where it needs to be. We have all these institutions coming in, and I mean, now's the time before you get left behind. So
Now, how do you see this in terms of, the opportunity to create wealth for yourself and your family? I let me maybe put a little bit of context in this. I used to think about whenever we were in uni, the dot-com era, and if used to think, man, if I had been able to be an investor in the 90s, what would, that have done for my life or my family's life? Personally, as I think about investing in this space, I see, just compared to any other market out there, commodities, equities, bonds, I just don't really see the upside as being worth the risk compared to a lot of these crypto networks. Bitcoin in particular, like you were saying, being the dominant one. But how do you think about this in terms of, creating wealth for yourself, creating wealth for your family, and just the opportunity?
yeah, that's a good question. So the big thing for me is Bitcoin is seen as like this store of value. And as we get more demand, the price is going to continue to increase. And I think 5, 10 years from now, it's going to be a crazy number. And what I ideally would like to do is take what I have in Bitcoin, keep accumulating, and I want to create nest eggs for, my family. Whether it be, my mom, my future kids. I want to create generational wealth with it because I think that's where it's going. I think it's taking over. And it's not all about me. It's about giving back. Maybe I send some to a charity I really care about. So yeah, I just want to ultimately give back with it, because we're all going to be in the grave one day, so we can't take it with us.
Yeah, how do you? That's actually a really interesting thought as well, because one of the trends or themes of this whole conversation has been your ability to continue to give back. Why is that so important to you? Why do you think that's something that's at the forefront of your behavior, but then also of your mind?
Yeah, so growing up, I had my mom and she put me into a lot of sports and it was great. And the only reason I believe I am the way I am is because I had such great mentors in all of these sports, whether it was baseball, basketball, even if I was just really bad at it, these guys took care of me. They treated me like family. They've seen me in my darkest moments. They've seen me go through some hardship and they've always been there to support me. And if I grow up or when I grow up and if I just don't give back and do that for someone else, who am I? Like I would just live with regret. And I mean, these guys have seen me cry. They've seen it all, man. So I just wanted to not only give back just because they did it, but just because it was such a good feeling to know I had someone to lean on. And I want to be able to give that good feeling back to other, kids who are coming up.
For sure. For sure. We're going to take a different path now. Bringing this back to crypto, as you've been doing a lot of research, we're going to get kind of cosmic too. You know, I really want you to
Yeah.
think 10 years, 15 years, put on your imaginative hat. The potential for, like you said earlier, to disrupt middlemen, right? Bitcoin is the banking system. But how else do you see this technology being able to be used to not only maybe empower the little man, but also just create more opportunity and maybe, yeah, opportunity and equality maybe a little bit?
Yeah, so what's really interesting to me is some of the global use cases. So you have people in like Venezuela who are dealing with like the hyperinflation, and now they have a way out. They have Bitcoin, and it's kind of bringing equality to the world. And I just think it's so awesome that people have that way out. Now you have a way for someone in Venezuela to, exchange cash with someone out here in the US, fairly easily, despite all the things they're going through. And to put on the imaginative cap, there's a lot more things than just that coming to the Bitcoin network. Like right now you're seeing the NFTs, that whole craze and mania. And for people who don't know, that stands for non-fungible tokens. And those are just, like unique items. A lot of it's like digital art, as you're seeing. You got like the crypto kitties and all that silly stuff. But I think a lot of that will come over to the Bitcoin network. You have like smart contracts coming on over. We're just seeing a lot of it in these other blockchains now. But just to really get creative with it, we're gonna see like, virtual reality in 10 years where you can use your NFTs you bought and play Call of Duty with that like blinged out weapon you bought from someone else. It's just nuts, man. I mean, the opportunities are just endless, and the things to come of it are exciting. I mean, every other week now there's something new, and it's incredibly hard to keep up with the space. So
Definitely,
yeah, I'm really,
definitely.
really looking forward to it.
Do you own any NFTs? Are there any NFT projects that you think are interesting?
Yeah, so I had a buddy 2 weeks ago from home tell me, yeah, check out Omi. And I don't know if he wants me really sharing it, but I'll share it anyways.
Alpha leak, Alpha leak.
So I don't know a ton about Omi, but what I've surmised is that there's this app called Vivi, and within there they have like NFT drops. So they have like a black and white Batman. I think they have like Powerpuff Girls on there, Adventure Time,
Oh, that's dope.
and they're super cool like figurines. And what you could do when you buy the NFT is you can put it in a virtual showroom, and then if you have like VR AR goggles, you can put them on and you can walk around and like
So sick.
look at your NFT statue of like the black and white Batman or whatever. And I think it's super cool. growing up as a kid too, I always wished I could like buy something in a game and then, sell it or buy something from someone else that I could use in the game. And I think that's kind of where we're headed with stuff like this. So yeah, I think I'm gonna buy like a black and white Batman from the VV app. And I got a little bit of Omi just for those purposes. But yeah, I'm not like super into the NFT craze. I just think it's really interesting because the video gamer in me really thinks they'll be used for things like that. So that's why I've taken a little bit of interest.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I had a an episode I did with BTC Uncle, and we talked about, NFTs, and I had this idea of like NFTs as virtual status symbols, which basically, like you said, being able to showcase your in-game items or your art or and I'm super interested about the connection between the material world and non-fungible tokens and also virtual reality worlds and augmented reality. How cool would it be if we could be playing Pokemon using our augmented reality goggles, and like I caught this dude and I trade you my Charmander that we were battling, but we're battling and these things are all being recorded on an open public ledger. I just
Right.
think that that's there's just so much potential. And talk about gaming, right? Because you said that it was because of your gaming background that you've really been kind of able to understand this. Talk about that.
Yeah, so my mom used to hate me when I was a video gamer, but in high school, middle school, all I ever wanted was video games. I think every Christmas it was just like, video games on the list. That was it. If I didn't get that, I was a little brat. But yeah, I would play for like 24 hours a day if I wasn't wrestling. I mean, because I would have just sat there and wasted away. But I'd play for like 24 hours. I'd be playing Halo. I play Mario Kart. At one point, I was number 14 in the world on a Mario Kart stage for like a time trial. Yo, I'm still nice with it though. I'm still real nice with it. But yeah, man, I would just play until I would fall asleep in the chair, wake up, pick up the remote, and keep playing. And once wrestling got a little more legit for me, I stepped away. But yeah, my mom would like take the games away, things like that. So all of that to say, I was obsessed with it. And I still kind of love it. I'm not a big gamer anymore, but that's kind of where that video gamer part of me comes from and why I do really like NFTs. And speaking of that though, I actually had a question for you. So with NFTs, and I haven't read enough about it to fully understand, I guess, but there's this whole like ownership aspect of it. And something I'm kind of like worried about with all of that is you can make an NFT, mint it on like the Ethereum blockchain, but who's to say someone can't just like go do that on another one? Who's to say someone can't just make some sort of copy on it and also mint it on the Ethereum blockchain? Like, what do you think of this whole ownership issue going on?
I see kind of like, I see a little bit of a bifurcation in the NFT world, to be honest. I see there being a lot of use cases that are extremely obvious and where that sort of issue that you just presented, I think doesn't necessarily matter as much. For example, video games, right? Neon District is a game being built by Blockade Games, and you could almost think about this game as like a mixture of like Final Fantasy and Kingdom Hearts, right? And if I was like in the sense that if I go and create this weapon, right? I created this weapon, I put in the labor, and now that this weapon is being tracked on the blockchain, if I send it to you, okay, now you have that item, and there's been this recorded sort of record of the transaction. I guess it depends on the mechanics of the video games, but when you play something like RuneScape or World of Warcraft, there's only so many of the premier items. But what really is bothersome about sort of the centralized trading of these in-game items, in my opinion, is the fact that one, the players don't really have control because at any time They can cut off a server, they could change the items, they could take away. So there's a lack of control. But then, two, I think there's also a lack of value creation for the gamer. So I've talked to, before I started Stake Podcast, I had a podcast called Blockchain Gaming Podcast, and got to talk to so many gaming studio people who are creating this new interoperable world of video games. Like, I don't think that, Nintendo and whoever makes the Final Fantasy games is escaping my mind right now. I don't think these people are going to be the first adopters. I think it's going to be new people who are creating these games. In regards to digital art, though, I do see kind of what you're saying, but I'm thinking, like, if I'm an artist, right? What really interests me about NFTs and art is if I make a painting, I can now put a QR code on the back of my painting, and every time I transfer that painting to someone else, if there's a transaction, the token should go with it. So this will prevent forgery, which is a huge thing in the art world. If you're I'm buying a Picasso, how the hell do I know this isn't a forged Picasso? So I think that just being able to track it, and what also I think is very interesting is the ability for artists to continue to get revenue from the sale of their art. So if I sell it again and sell it again, well, I get a 10% kickback every time that that token is transferred to someone else. So I think that that's very interesting. But yes, you're right. Like, if I create a digital piece of artwork, there's nothing stopping you from just copying that image, making another NFT and doing the exact same thing, except for the fact that it wasn't done by the artist. And I think that matters. I think that, like, the transaction to be able to say, like, if I was some famous artist, I created it and everyone knows it came from my wallet. The moment that 100 years later that we're able to track that piece of artwork, digital artwork, back to me. Okay, there's been 100 of other forged copies, but I feel like that's the same thing in the art world as well. Like, you that they run that exact same risk of, well, what's just stopping me from taking this photograph and completely copying your photograph? And I think that really what it comes down to is that creation from the creator does matter. And that's really what I think. That's really what I think. But
Okay. Yeah, I think
yeah, you go, because I don't want to talk. I want you to talk.
I was gonna say, well, first off, when you mentioned Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts is the only game I still play. Like, I've beaten literally all of them. So I'm a super Kingdom Hearts fan, so I'm gonna have to check out Neon District. But yeah, along the NFT lines, I was looking at Twitter yesterday because it was trending. And there was a whole debate about, what do you do if someone like forges your art? And to a point you made, someone was like, well, if it's just coming from Joe Schmo, who cares? But at the same time, then they were talking about, how do you say the artist does want to go after that person who's forging it? Like, how do you go about doing that? Like, do you get the courts involved? And maybe that's something like smart contracts have to work on. Or some work that can be done there. But I don't know. I think it's all super interesting.
For sure.
I think the ease of entry is just absolutely crazy because you got people who can't even draw now, who can hop in on art.
And like make some NFTs and sell them too. Like some trash art I've seen be selling on some of these marketplaces.
Like I could maybe I don't know exactly how it works. I haven't minted one, but maybe I take a picture of like some kindergartner's drawing and like let's sell that for like 5 ETH. It's
No.
crazy.
And what I love about this space, and why I've kind of wanted to do this podcast too, is like we're all still learning. There is no right answer. We don't know, you know? And so it's like it's the exploring the unknown. And I think that in being able to find the arbitrage between what people think and what like reality actually is, will be where you can make money. And I love the fact that, as we wrap up this conversation, we get to the point where it's like, hey, like we're both still trying to figure this. We don't actually know. We know that this thing is going to change the world. We know that there's going to be some projects that create a lot of money, but then we also know there's going to be hundreds of things that are just scams and trash and just shit that no one really should even
100%.
touch. Before we turn to the audience questions, I want to just kind of hand the platform over to you. As we wrap up here, thank you for your time. I know it's very precious. And was there anything that I didn't ask or that we haven't talked about that I should have or that you thought we would get to Maybe I'm forgetting.
Nothing off the top of my head. I guess I more so just want to, say something. I think going back to the challenges, I really think that a lot of people in this world don't push themselves enough. And I think, in school and things like that, we do. But I think physically that, if you're watching this, go out and do something, whether it's today, it's tomorrow, it's a week from now, that really makes you hurt physically. Like for some people, that might be running a mile. For others, it might be doing crazy stuff like I'm doing. But do it because it sucks. But when you're done, you kind of get this euphoric feeling, and you'll just learn a lot more about yourself, and you'll be able to see that you can do a whole lot more than you ever thought. So I just want to kind of challenge people to go out, push themselves. Don't wait till New Year's. None of these New Year's resolutions, man. I hate seeing that stuff. Like, all right, I'll wait till New Year's and then
Yeah.
I'll get to do it. Because you never do it. Like, set the goals now, do it today, do it right after this podcast, and just get after it. Set those goals because you're gonna learn a lot more about yourself than you ever thought you could through this through adversity. And I always joke around. I always say adversity is my best friend. So,
Yeah,
make
no.
adversity your best friend.
I really like that as a closing statement. Take action and challenge yourself. I think that's a great way to wrap this up. Before we turn to these audience questions, Riley Henderson, she asks, do you see any applications for crypto technologies in the work that you do for telecom or the communities you've been a part of for wrestling?
Wow, that is a great question. That's actually my girlfriend.
Well, hey, Riley.
in terms of telecom, I haven't thought too much of how to apply it there just because I kind of try to keep work as work. And when I go down the rabbit hole, I just look at everything else. So that's something I definitely do want to look into. Maybe there's some sort of tokenization we could do with, phone data coming across. But yeah, I honestly don't know on that front. In the wrestling community, maybe it would be nice to have like a ledger of results from tournaments that's just shared worldwide. Because right now in the wrestling community, it's really hard to get results from certain tournaments, especially like some of the smaller local ones. And a lot of those are used to determine rankings. See how kids did head to head against others. So maybe there could be like some blockchain that comes out with all these results, has them all in the ledger. It sets up all the rankings. You don't like people don't have to go and subjectively submit them. And maybe there'll be like a meathead coin or a wrestling coin.
Another question from the audience. What is a good challenge for those new to crypto that will help them learn more about the space and the technology?
A good challenge. So I always say the best way to learn is to put some skin in the game. So honestly, I would just say if you're interested in a project like Bitcoin or something else, put a little bit of money in it because then you're going to have a little bit of an incentive to follow it. And you don't have to throw a ton. Like it could be, like a fraction of Bitcoin, which you guys can buy fractions of Bitcoin called Satoshis. You guys don't have to buy a full Bitcoin. I have a lot of friends who still didn't know that. But yeah, get a little skin in the game. And for me, I always like to tell people to start with the white paper, follow some of the people on the team on Twitter. A lot of people in the crypto community tweet a lot. It's a very active community. There's a lot of memes, chief of meme officers, funny stuff. But yeah, I think that's the best way to do it. Just start reading. And usually once you start reading, you easily find more resources and go down the rabbit hole. So it's getting in the game and read the white paper, follow the inventors of the, whatever coin or blockchain it is.
I couldn't agree more. Well, I think that wraps up our interview. Jordan Laster, thank you for your time. It's been, a great pleasure to be able to have you on this platform. And hopefully we'll have you back again sometime. And yes, to the dorks out there, stay staked. Jordan, I'll give the last word to you and then we'll end it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Eduardo. Really appreciate it, man. Hopefully we have this conversation again in the next few months, and I'm sure we'll both have a treasure trove of knowledge by then
Yeah.
on some of the new stuff coming out. So looking forward to
And hopefully we'll be a little bit richer by then.
it. Yeah, stacking sets.
Stay humble, stack sets, stack atoms too to the dorks out there. All right. Thank you guys, and see you in the next one. Peace.
See you guys.